The great tones of the great Dr. David Caputo, President Emeritus of Pace University, retired Pace professor extraordinaire in his day of political science. We welcome Dr. Caputo. David, how are you?
I'm fine, Jay, and how are you today?
I'm doing okay. Quite a day yesterday. We knew it was coming, but the vote is in. 232-197. You had 10 Republicans joining in on the mix as the president impeached by the House of Representatives. Incitement of insurrection, the charge, in the wake of the assault from last Wednesday on the Capitol building, thus becoming the only president now, David, to be impeached twice. 10 Republicans, as mentioned, including Liz Cheney, third-ranking House GOP leader. No surprises here. We knew it was coming, right?
I think the surprise is the number of Republicans, given impeachments are always political. They have political aspects to it. And as has been pointed out, the number of Republicans who voted for this impeachment sets a record. Even though it's a small number, it is a significant number. We knew it was coming. I think the 6th of January will go down in the United States history, and as political scientists and historians look at that date, it'll be a sad day for the United States given what happened.
No question. And again, virtually guaranteed the end of his term is scheduled next Wednesday, the 20th. The interesting caveat here, and I stated it yesterday, is the Senate Majority Leader, at least for now, Mitch McConnell, stating the earliest an impeachment trial could start is, what, next Tuesday? That's the 19th, day before the inauguration. So a trial, folks, can be held after Trump leaves office and would have as a main goal preventing him from being able to hold federal office again. And that comes into play on two fronts here. A, which way will McConnell go as far as the vote? He has not made that public yet. And also, that really is the goal right now. You know, because if everybody's on board, and I want to clarify here, David, regarding a second term, 2024, as far as Donald Trump. Now, a couple of things have to happen regarding that, in which rather after two-thirds of the senators present voting to remove Donald Trump, a simple majority of senators present, they would have to approve an additional vote, correct? To bar him from the presidency in 2024. Is that correct, sir?
Yes and no. If you read carefully through the impeachment document itself, they do include the exclusion under the 14th Amendment. There's unfortunately, the delay and the timing and everything means that this is going to go over to the next session, when the Senate is back in session, and it's going to cause a variety of complications. Number one, while there has been precedent to try individuals after they've been impeached and after they've left office, it's never been done for a sitting for a former president. So we don't know what kind of constitutional challenges may be made to that. So that will take some could take some time. Number two, we don't know if we do not get the two-thirds vote, if the two-thirds vote does not happen in the Senate. And incidentally, that's two-thirds vote of those voting, as long as it's over a majority of the Senate. So some senators could simply abstain, as we saw there were several who did not vote in the House side on impeachment. So that would be a factor also. So what this really does is it creates a great deal of uncertainty going into the new administration, and I think it raises a variety of important questions. But you are correct. If everything were to go as the proponents have advocated, you would have a vote. The president would be convicted of inciting insurrection, and then the 14th Amendment would either be applied retroactive to the conviction or by a separate vote, which only takes a majority of the Senate. So we're, again, headed into uncharted waters. And one of my concerns is that this the constitutional implications of this will slow the process down. And number two, it really raises some important questions in terms of timing and strategy for the incoming administration, because whether we want to admit it or not, the country is facing other crises, especially in terms of the pandemic and also the economic recovery. So this is going to be a difficult period. We have to get to that period yet. We still have a week to go. Threats of violence, not quite sure what's going to happen. And so there's a lot of unanswered questions as we go ahead. And I think for many people who thought that perhaps the impeachment in the House would take care of many of these issues, it has not. What it has done is simply brought other issues front and central. And the United States, I think, remains in a constitutional crisis.
No question. I want to be clear here and make sure we all have this right. So in essence, David, the Senate cannot skip the conviction and removal vote that requires the two-thirds of the senators and go straight into the simple majority vote. And I'm talking about for future disqualification, correct? Do I have that right now?
Yes, there has to be. The Senate has to convict. And that does take two-thirds of the body voting.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you see, folks, that's where it becomes a little hazy. Because the we're talking about the Constitution here. The disqualification language, and I did a little bit of research on this, not much, but it's disqualification to hold and enjoin the office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. So, you know, the thing in that regard, when you think about it, is no court, or for that matter, no Congress, has ever settled the question, when you think about it, of whether the presidency counts, David, as an office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States, you know, from which the Senate is able to ban an impeached and convicted individual, correct? I mean, that's really what it comes down to when you equate exactly the meaning of it all here. Not to get too technical, you know.
Well, you are correct in that anytime you have constitutional issues, there are a variety of opinions and views about it. But I think most constitutional lawyers would agree that presidency would fall under that ruling. But again, it could be challenged, and so again, you could see the process here.
No doubt about it, David Caputo with us. So you need 17 or so Republicans to go along with a vote to come about in and around January the 19th. In your estimation, do they get those 17 to flip in your estimation?
I think it's going to be a stretch, but it's always possible. Remember, between now and I think it will be after the 19th, I think the trial will, you know, the shortest trial, I believe, conviction impeachment trial has been 23 days, so that I cannot imagine that this is going to just be done quickly. There'll be full schedules and everything worked out in the next few days between the leaders of both parties. So we have to wait and see. But sometime, probably within the first month, perhaps first 6 weeks of the new administration, there would be a vote in the Senate. Does it get 17? I think that partially depends on two things. Number one, what additional information comes out about the insurrection in terms of were there others involved, was there planning involved, and so forth. And I think we'll learn more about that going forward. And I think second thing really depends to some extent on Senator McConnell and his position and what how the trial itself goes. So I think there's a possibility, but I would not. I would say at this point, we really don't know. To get 17 additional votes, may not need that many, again, if some of the senators decide not to vote. So we just have to wait and see.
All right. We'll take a look at that. Important stuff. Now let's get to the Ryan investigation. There's a lot of questions now, David. that have been raised about whether rioters had so-called insider help. When you look at it all here, it seemed to be more than just a protest that spiraled out of control. There's a lot of evidence uncovered so far. Weapons, we know, tactics seen on the surveillance. And it suggests the breach may have been planned. One protest organizer said he coordinated with three House Republicans. So you got the DOJ now using tactics it typically employs in counterterrorism investigations, and that to capture these new suspects. So, you know, you got a lot going on here now with, I think, the number of federal criminal cases up to 32, hundreds more expected. So in essence, you have another deal here that is, clouding up the picture of a new administration coming and everything else. But this investigation has to keep going. And it seems like we're finding something new out every day. And that's going to be the case for a long time, I think.
Well, I think you're right. I think if you go back and think about the immediate aftermath for a month or so after 9/11, each day there were different sets of allegations and different sets of accusations and so forth about what happened and who was involved and so forth and so on, most of which turned out not to be true, but some were. So I think you're going to find the same thing here. One thing we did not mention when we were talking about the impeachment process, remember the president still could face, I think, additional charges in terms of his role if the Justice Department decided to pursue him in terms of a criminal violation in terms of incitement. So that would be a factor also. But coming back, I've been trying to watch as many different versions of what happened, and as you watch it, it at times appears to be chaotic and undisciplined. At other times, it appears to be very organized, with people knowing where they're going and so forth. It's surreal at times when you see some of the individuals coming into the rotunda and snapping pictures in the various places and so forth. Some of whom were, I think, just swept in, but I think the vast majority of people who came into those chambers knew exactly what they were doing. And it was we came within probably minutes of a major, major catastrophe.
David Caputo with us. You mentioned a key word here, organized, David. Anything but is regarding the vaccine right now. You got pharmacies offering their help as this country is struggling with its COVID-19 rollout. Pharmacists across the country would have the capacity to administer 100 million doses of this vaccine once supply is available, which is the caveat to all of this. I was reading where the World Health Organization now is asking some of the wealthier countries to share vaccines with lower-income countries. You know, it just seems that you have a complete dropping of the ball here in this country as far as the government and as far as the states. Their plan. I've been critical of how New York is going about it. I mean, reading the other day where the state has only inoculated 41% of its supply, it's unacceptable right now. There's no real plan in place. Now you're on the fly, 65 and old and out to get the vaccine. I know people who are in categories A and B, 1A, 1B, that can't get a shot until April. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Why do you think Operation Warp Speed is anything but right now as far as the rollout?
Well, I think there are several reasons. Number one is that anytime you try to, first of all, inoculating the numbers that need to be inoculated, vaccinated, I think is overwhelming and takes a great deal of planning. And that planning was not there. The federal government saw its role in Warp Speed as simply delivering the vaccine. So that's issue number one. And then you have the 50 states each trying to figure out what they're going to do with different sorts of regulations and different sorts of success rates. And number three, there's really not been, and I think you have to fault the president here, and I think you have to fault the administration, there has not been an all-out effort to try to mobilize the United States in terms of understanding the importance of the vaccinations. And I think you're going to see that change with the new administration. I think there'll be a very heavy emphasis on the vaccinations. And then there's a fourth reason, and that is we still don't have the supply that we would need, let's say we were successful in getting all the shots in the arm as we get the the vaccine rolling out, it would still be months and months before because of the shortages. This may get alleviated if we get additional vaccines that turn out to be as effective as hopefully the Moderna and the Pfizer ones are. But that remains to be seen. And the fourth factor here is that there is always a possibility, and let's hope that this has not come to fruition, and that is that some of these variant strains could would not be, that the vaccines would not be as effective. But I think the largest reason, the main reason is it's logistical. You're asking, in many cases, health providers to do something at the very time that they're so overwhelmed with the large number of cases and the large the increase in the number of people who are being hospitalized and so forth. So in a way, it's a perfect storm against vaccination. And I think you have to start at the bottom and work your way through the different issues. And number one, I would say be supply. Number two would be getting actual mobilization. You know, there's talk about Citi Field and Yankee Stadium being turned into mass vaccination sites. Those are things that would have to be done. They're going to have to be done across the country. And then the other factor is individuals opting out of getting vaccinated. And those are a larger number, I think, than most people would like to see at this point. So clearly hope on the horizon, but how soon will we get to that horizon, I think, is the important question.
These venues come into play, Citi Field, Yankee Stadium, who, you know, listen, here on the island, Bethpage Park, it all makes sense. You know, you must open up these large stadiums, arenas, and whatnot, get these people, but you got to have the medicine without question here. And by the way, before I came on the air today, I heard of Johnson & Johnson coming through with a vaccine. 90% plus effective. The good thing, two good things about this vaccine, which to me actually usurps Pfizer and Moderna. One, does not have to be brought in at some of those Antarctic temperatures, you know, the 100 below zero, whatever it is. Two, only one dose needed. You don't have to go for that second shot, you know, weeks and weeks down the road here. So, David, that is extremely encouraging news coming from Johnson and Johnson there. Extremely encouraging.
Yes, it is. And it's news that I think many people anticipated. What it does is not only do you now have a third source of a vaccine that apparently is safe and effective, it also means that you can, given the needs for how you transport and so forth, means that you can get it to smaller hospitals that don't have the subarctic coolers and so forth that are needed for the especially for Pfizer. So I think if this one gets approved, and I would expect that once its field trials are totally done and they apply, that it will get approved. I think it will be a game changer, a possible game changer in terms of being able to get more vaccine out there, but also a vaccine that can be more easily implemented.
No question. One more for you. Talking with Dr. David Caputo, and this one very much under the radar, you know, with everything else going on, but it really, you know, sheds so much light right now as far as outgoing individuals of this administration who have walked away and whatnot. Yeah. And this is the problem, folks, leading up to an inauguration of a new administration. But, you know, I read a report yesterday where you have Afghanistan's intelligence agency now says it has foiled an ISIS attempt to assassinate a U.S. diplomat in Kabul. The country's national directorate of security reported that four members of ISIS were planning to attack this Ross Wilson, I think his name was, along with some Afghan senior officials. So, you know, it just kind of brings into light here of never letting your guard down, even in transition and despair of what we're seeing in this country right now. You know what? People from other groups don't care. They feel it's an opportune time to kind of take advantage of some situations there. But very interesting report that caught my eye yesterday, David.
Yes, and there are probably other reports similar that we just, you know, have not been made public yet. But I think the broader question is one of transition, and transitions are usually difficult in the sense that moving one set of leaders in, another set of leaders out, making sure people are up to speed on various things. This one is going to be, already has been, and will continue to be very difficult given the president's unwillingness to acknowledge that he's been been defeated and that there needs to be full cooperation. Hopefully that will, in the next few days, change. But up to now, it hasn't. And I think what that does is it forces the Biden administration in its planning to come in, and they may be forced to deal with crises which would not have happened if we had had a more orderly transition. So I think this is very important going forward. I think this is will determine to some extent how successful the transition goes on the part of the new president and his team. Because the other thing that, you know, is often overlooked, there's really a dearth of people, a scarcity of people in some of the sub-level appointments that are going to have to be appointed quickly in terms of assistant secretaries in the various cabinets, in addition to the formal approval for the cabinet secretaries. So that all has to move very quickly. And, you know, the argument that the first 100 days is so critical is true, but you can't really accomplish what you hope to accomplish if you're spending all your time trying to get people in position to do things. And I think that could lead to some confusion and chaos. I think we'll learn more as the president-elect makes his various plans available, as I understand it, major speech tonight, which will outline a variety of things. So it remains to be seen, but you are correct. The United States is probably in a much more vulnerable position than it needs to be, and it's directly due to the lack of an orderly transition.
Interesting. 6 days coming up. All eyes upon. Upon you, sir, for your next appearance. We look forward to that. Dr. David Caputo, president of Ernest Pace University. Yes, indeed. Retired Pace professor of political science. You stay well, sir. We'll talk next time. Thank you.
Very good.
Very
Thank
much.
You.
Yep. There you go. Great insight there, as you always get.